I'm Susie Larson. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Susie Larson Live. It's only just a matter of... This is an encore presentation of Susie Larson Live. To Susie Larson Live. Always honored to get to spend this time with you. In fact, I look forward to bringing you conversations every single day that hopefully inspire you in your faith walk, that deepen your understanding of God's Word, and that heightens your awareness of His very real presence in your life. Well, if you listen often enough, you know this. Each month we have our good friend Dr. Troy Spurl on the show to talk about health and the healing process. And I was waiting for us to go live. I mean, maybe you've already realized this, but I'm such a bright bulb. I just realized the word heal is in the word health. Isn't that something? Maybe you already figured that out. But anyway, today we're going to kick off our conversation talking about gut health. And I don't want you to wait till the last half of the show to share your questions. Can't take calls today, but we will take text. And I've got a whole backlog of questions from our live stream event last time Doc and I talked. So you can text your questions, get them in right now. 877-933-2484. A quick caveat, Dr. Troy isn't here to diagnose you over the air, or nor has his advice meant to take the place of your physician. You listen to what your doctor says. What we do every month is try to just kind of step back and maybe give you a bigger picture of what's possible when you tend to your health before it becomes a crisis, when you start to shore up your health before things go awry. And if they are going awry, there are still natural things that you can do to help contribute to the healing process. But one thing we both want you to know and believe is that there are next steps of health that you can take where you can be bringing your best self when you show up for life. Not one of us is stuck. There are things we can do. Maybe it's just changing your mindset and the story you tell yourself. Maybe it's drinking more water or getting to bed on time or silencing the berating thoughts or eating less sugar and more fiber and more protein. Whatever it is, there are always next steps we can each take. No condemnation, but it is an invitation to just feel a little bit better, to get some ground in your health process. So, quick announcement. We are a listener-supported ministry, and if you've never supported Faith Radio, but you feel like you benefit from the ministry, would you consider being part of the giving family? You can give safely and securely online at myfaithradio.com. And if you're already giving, I just want to say a special thank you, because we absolutely couldn't do this without you, and we wouldn't want to. If you're ministered to by the content that you hear day in and day out on Faith Radio, tell your friends about us and share us with a friend. Either way, let's spread the good news together. Thanks so much for being part of our Faith Radio family. All right, let me tell you about my guest. We'll get him on the show. Dr. Troy Spurl is founder and CEO of Synapse Center for Health and Healing, located in Eagan, Minnesota. He started Synapse over 26 years ago with a vision to bring an integrative approach to healthcare through functional medicine, making Synapse an internationally known center for true health and healing. Dr. Troy, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me. Always a pleasure.
Looking forward to the conversation. Normally we're in studio together, not today, but that's okay because you sound like you're right in the room. So, but let's start with a verse. Is there a passage you've been thinking about these days?
Yes, let's go right back to the beginning, Genesis 2:7. Then the Lord God formed man of dust from the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living being.
Wow, say more.
Well, for me, that's just something that, as I get to know the human body a little bit more, that scripture just kind of jumps out at me, because I realize, and many doctors, as they really dive into it, realize how much of that statement is true with what we're seeing. We look at the dirt itself and how much it influences our overall function on daily life right now. And so for me, a lot of what I was studying in science ended up kind of validating what I was reading in the Bible. And so, and that's true to this day. And one of the things I really wanted to focus on today was a little bit more about dirt and bacteria and our digestive system and things of that nature that actually we couldn't live without. And when things aren't in balance, there some of the detriments that can occur.
Well, let's start there. You want to talk about gut health, and you also want to talk about mitochondria. Maybe that is gut health, but take it from there.
Well, for me, one of the things that gets missed a lot, especially with people suffering from a lot of chronic disease, is really their mitochondria. And for those that remember mitochondria in school, they did a good job of teaching one aspect of mitochondria. And mitochondria, if you ask people who kind of remember from science class, they always say it's the powerhouse of the cell. It's what gives us energy, and that's true. What often is missed is that the mitochondria that is in our body comes from bacteria, number one. Number two, it does give us the energy by producing ATP, but it also is a part of a larger system that helps our immune system, that helps protect our DNA, it helps release antioxidants, and your mitochondria can do more prevention of infection and immune challenges by having it release quite a bit more than taking. You could take 1,000 milligrams of vitamin C every day, and it won't do what mitochondria, just a small percentage of the mitochondria, will do in just a 24-hour period. So our mitochondria are really, really important for our overall health and well-being. And a lot of it, it's in every cell of our body, but it communicates. The bacteria that is in our gut communicate with our mitochondria. And so a lot of times you really need to get the bacterial or dysbiosis or the microbiome in the digestive system nice and balanced to help your mitochondria, which then can help with your chronic fatigue, your fibromyalgia, your recovery from chronic disorders, even debilitating ones like chronic Lyme or SIRS or things of that nature. So the mitochondria more and more is coming out about how important it is just with our overall vitality.
So what would you guess the percentage of people actually have a healthy gut versus have something going on in their gut? Do most people have gut issues?
In the United States, yes.
Yeah.
In the United States, we're probably close to 80 or 90% of people. And then they're all on a different path of health or ill health.
Hmm. And so with these varying gut issues, I would imagine each path to healing, because, you know, SIBO is one thing versus Candida is another. So the path to healing, there's different diets and all that kind of stuff. But let's start with a basically healthy gut, someone who said, you know, they don't have digestive problems. Now, they might be eating food that's causing other problems, but they don't feel gut stuff anyway. What could a basically normal person, which I am not, do for the mitochondria in their gut? Let's just start with that, and then we'll kind of branch off into different issues and what different situations should tend to.
Well, what they're finding is fascinating. There are some people that can pretty much eat anything. They eat all food, and it doesn't bother them. And we realize the number one strongest influencer of that is the bacteria in the digestive tract. The bacteria help with enzymes that break things down. The bacteria help with creating a pH for a better environment. And then it also helps if these same people tend not to take on mental stress or the stress of life. So they're either naturally gifted at surrendering, or if they never take it on in the first place, there's nothing to surrender. So some people are like that. The image that I usually have in my head is the Homer Simpsons of life, where there's kind of, sometimes we have that character that it goes in one ear and out the other, and because of that, they're blessed with a healthy gut, regardless of what they eat. I'll say it that
so
way.
Unfair.
It's so unfair. Yeah. That's a talking out with God directly.
Yeah. So tell us some of the basic things that maybe apply to any gut issue, things that we ought to be doing right now to care for our gut health. And side note, and you can talk about this after you answer this question, but maybe, friends, you've heard this before, but even Harvard Medical School says that they consider the gut and the brain kind of like one organ because they're so interconnected. And that's why gut health and brain health are so very important. So what are just some basic things we can all do? Or is there not really even a one-size-fits all in that regard?
Well, there is a lot. One of the things that concerns me is a lot of people who really work on good hygiene have poor guts because of that. So I'll give you an example. We now know that the bacteria on our skin communicates with the bacteria in our gut, which communicates with the mitochondria in our cells. And so rolling around in the dirt is something that's actually good for your gut. And so, and a lot of that comes from childhood. So you can be out playing outdoors and everything and getting dirty, if you will. That's actually good for us. And that, I think, has been known for a while. And we're losing a little bit of that. The more we try and get rid of bacteria on our in our lives, the more challenges we're going to end up having, number one. Number two, anything that you can that helps with sleep and that restoration, it's, that really helps delivering the blood flow to the gut at the same time. And then probiotics or good bacteria need prebiotics. That's basically things like fiber. So we have to have some level of fiber in our diet to feed the bacteria for the most part. And so vegetables that when you consume vegetables, they really, vegetables are just so good for us on so many levels, especially if they're clean. And that the fiber that's in there can really be beneficial. Now, some people, if their gut is a little bit of a mess and it's inflamed, then the fiber isn't necessarily going to help them right out of the gate. So I'll say it this way. Fiber's job is to rub up against the walls of the intestines, as well as there's soluble and insoluble fiber. The insoluble rubs up against the walls. The soluble can kind of sit there, and it pulls in moisture, and the bacteria feed off the soluble. So if the fiber is rubbing up against the sides of the walls, it's kind of like scrubbing it. It keeps you clean, keeps it clean, and that's great to help prevent colon cancer and things like that. But picture the same scenario with a massage therapist. If a massage therapist is just massaging your arms and your back, it can feel good and relaxing. But if you get a sunburn and then get that same deep tissue massage, then all of a sudden it's irritating and you can't do it. You can't go through it. If your bowels or intestines are inflamed and the fiber's rubbing up against it, it's the same as getting a massage when you've got a sunburn. So fiber can be irritating to some. So if some people, I've had patients come in and say, I can't do vegetables because I feel worse afterwards. I feel more bloated. I feel crampy or just sick. That's a sign that you're inflamed and that the fiber is irritating things. So you got to put the fires out first. And probiotics are a big part of that. And anti-inflammatory diets can help, or cooking the vegetables can help in the beginning. So most people have to start out, if they've gotten away from a healthy gut, they have to start out by really going slower with their fiber and cooking their vegetables and reducing things like sugar and alcohol and some other inflammatory foods that might really be detrimental to them. And then they can start to build up, feed the good bacteria with probiotics. And some people, if you don't have SIBO, then fermented food is good. If you have SIBO, then you want to fix that first before doing the fermented food. But generally speaking, we've got to get back to getting the food fresh from the garden to our table as quickly as possible, as close to where you live as possible is ideal. And the bacteria that's in the environment, getting that into our system.
Okay, we need to pause here. And so, you know, it's snowing out for most of us in the Midwest. I see a text came in from Texas. So our friend from Texas can roll around in the dirt. The rest of us, we're going to do it in April. We're going to roll around in the dirt. And I want to hear from you after you've done it. We've got to pause here. When we come back, we'll take Meg's text from Austin, Texas. And Tom, I see your text as well. We'll get that one as well. Talking to Dr. Troy Spurrell. We welcome your questions. I got a whole list of them from a recent event we did together. But I want to hear from you. We'll prioritize those that come in on the text. 877-933-2484. Quick thing I want you to think about, Doc, on the other side. I've heard that when you have carbs and you get bloated, that's most likely candida. When you eat veggies, that's that colon kind of inflammation. And so they're two different things. It's our bodies really do tell us what we need to know. More about Dr. Troy when we return. You're listening to an encore presentation of Susie Larson Law. Hunger for more of your mercy, your goodness. Lord, you're the air that I breathe. That's who you are to me. Hmm. I Thanks for tuning in to Susie Larson Live. Every month we have our good friend Dr. Troy Spurl on the show. He's a functional med doc, and we have these conversations to help cast a vision for what a more healthy, healed you just might look like. And there's so many preventative things, natural things we can do to shore up our health, but it's just not a one-size-fits-all proposition because we each have deficits and weaknesses and ailments, and so really got to be in tune with our bodies. So we just try to tackle some of these different issues each month. We welcome your questions. Dr. Troy was ready to answer them. Text them in, 877-933-2484. Before the break, Doc was saying how we all need to roll in the dirt. We need that bacteria. And Meg says, today would be a great day to roll in the dirt. It's sunny and 68 degrees out in Texas. So thanks, Meg, for that. We're all making a field trip. But she says, I have a question. I've got a question. I'm a fitness instructor with a pretty regular training schedule. Once in a while, I'll have an upset stomach and a loose stool. But I know if I stick it out and go teach my strength training and cardio classes anyway, I notice I just feel amazing afterward. I've heard that lower body strength training can stimulate an immune response. Wow, I never heard that before. Do you know why we feel so great after exercise, even if you show up not feeling well? I love that question.
Yeah, me too, because the answer is mitochondria.
Come so on.
Yes. Yeah, so
you paid
cool
her
thing.
To call. Anyway.
No. That's a great question, because there's two things, actually. So mitochondria is one, and let me walk through that part of it. So in order for your mitochondria, which are kind of like little generators within the body, they have to kind of get wound up. They have to become stressed. And so if you don't stress the cell that they're in, the mitochondria start to wind down and shut down. And there was a study in Harvard that showed that it will impact longevity if you don't stress your mitochondria. So physical exercise by far is the best way to stress your mitochondria. Now, you can overdo it for sure. So that's one thing. So the legs, she's right about the legs, because the legs just have the largest muscles in the body and therefore will have a ton of mitochondria. Now, the heart itself, there's more mitochondria in a smaller area within the heart, but when you're exercising, you're also using the heart. So lower extremity leg exercises is one of the best things you do for mitochondria. And like I said before, when the mitochondria get stressed a little bit, then they start jamming on the ATP, and then from that, from the cell signaling, you'll get a release of antioxidants. Some people have heard about endorphins. That's a different thing. The antioxidants will actually help the immune system, stimulate the immune system. It's like feeding your immune system. So whenever I would start to get sick in the past, if I was feeling anything, I go right to the gym, and I have a workout. And it's rare I've not missed a day of work in 22 years, and it was rare for me to even have any symptoms longer than an hour to 2 hours by having that strategy. I'd go into the gym, and then I'd also start sweating, drink lots of water. And so there's a lot of validity to that.
Wow.
The second part of that conversation is that every time you're using your muscles, you're sending signals back to the brain. And so the brain helps regulate a lot of the feedback to the gut. And so the more you exercise, there's a recovery, and it puts you it pulls you out of fight or flight and into a rest and digest state post-exercise. So a couple hours after exercising, you are getting the vagal nerve and the parasympathetic nervous system, the part of the brain, firing more to your digestive centers to help recover from the workout. So
love
you
that.
Go into this anti-inflammatory state. It's awesome.
Wow, that's just super awesome. In fact, Meg, you win the award so far for the most interesting question of the day. So I want to send you a book off our Faith Radio shelf. I'm not sure which one, but I want you to email me, info@susielarson.com. Remind me of this conversation because my inbox gets crazy. But I'm going to send you a book because that just made me happy. That answer just... of all the years we've been talking, I don't know that we've ever had that conversation, and that's fantastic, and it explains so much. All right, Amy has a very interesting question. She should probably win a book as well. I'm feeling generous. Let's just
give
lots
of
books. Okay, Amy says, hey guys, fascinating conversation. I wonder if Dr. Troy can comment on probiotics in a bottle. 60 Minutes did a piece a few months ago about probiotics over the counter. Her text came in three pieces and I can't tell which order. Okay, let me see. 60 Minutes did a piece a few months ago about probiotics not being effective and really a waste of money. They suggested that may be detrimental, though I can't remember how. Should the consumer avoid over-the-counter probiotics and get them through ferments instead?
So I know exactly what she's talking about, and it's not that they're detrimental. The research they were talking about was poor research, and it's kind of my problem with science. They don't take the big picture look at things, so you have to really discern through good science, bad science. And what other research articles found is that even if you take probiotics and they pass by the microbiome, they influence the microbiome in a positive way. So that is good, healthy probiotics, number one. So even if it doesn't, so think of like probiotics like seeds that you're planting in a field. If the pH of the soil is good and the soil is fertile, then the seeds will be planted and you will have cultures or new crops that form there. But what that study found was there was not a lot of benefit to taking the probiotics, but they never looked at all the other scenarios. Number one, were the probiotics viable? Were they alive? If you take over-the-counter probiotics and they're not alive, then they're useless. And so, and if they're not clean or you know, they're scrupulous companies that are basically putting out bad material, fillers and things like that, yeah, they can definitely be harmful. But they're not harmful because of the probiotics. So if you can get a good, reputable probiotic, that's step one. However, the real scenario is you've got to create the terrain for good soil. When you tweak your diet so that you're not eating inflammatory foods. If you're eating sugar all day long, alcohol at night to go to sleep, coffee in the morning to wake up, and then sugar all day long, it doesn't matter what you take for probiotics. That is not going to create a good environment for the probiotics to plant and then become fertile. If you are not producing the right stomach acids, it's really a lifestyle issue. So probiotics start with food first, getting the good bacteria from our food, getting the fiber in there, and if you do it right, probiotics in a supplement form can be a good supplement to a healthy diet and lifestyle. I have seen amazing changes with especially young kids just from supplements alone, though, without changing anything. We've had kids with learning disorders that changed within 2 weeks of being put on probiotics because it was enough to jumpstart some of their mitochondria, and all of a sudden their brain started turning on. Even things like there's a syndrome where the eye was turning out and the eye came back and started tracking, and the only change we had was probiotics. So we know there's a lot of value there, but not a fan of the 60 Minutes, I'm going to say, was just not a comprehensive look at the body.
Picture. We got to jump here. Hard break here. I'll tell you, friends, I found Activa has an almond yogurt for us lactose-free people full of probiotics. Just had to say it because it's really yummy. We'll be back in a minute.
He started something good.
This is an encore presentation of Suzy Larson Live. Thanks for tuning in to Suzy Larson Live. If there was a camera in studio, you'd see me bop, and I cannot not move to that song. I'm so glad you're listening today. Our good friend Dr. Troy Spurl joins us every month to answer your questions about health and the healing process. You can text in your question. We've got a number of them to get to here. 877-933-2484. So our dear listener friend Tom says, my wife and I lived in a house for 27 years, which had a lot of mold and animal stuff, mice, bat, chipmunks, droppings. We could hear them in the ceiling. I grew up in the house. We are now 58, have different allergies. My big one is mold. What do you suggest we do? Forgot to say, we drink a lot of water every day, 120 ounces. What do you say, Doc?
Yeah, that is a tough scenario. We know that there's a lot of consequences to growing up in moldy environments, even if it's not the Stachybotrys or the black mold, the toxic mold. Generally speaking, your immune system is going to go after anything that it does not recognize as being innately made of you or from you or serves you in some way. Mold creates mycotoxins, some of them not as toxic as others, but they're still going to produce mycotoxins. Your body has to get rid of those. The way it gets rid of it is using the immune system. So growing up in that is going to create a lot of food reactions. Now, that becomes a very overburdened immune system response, and then that can create anything from allergies to autoimmunity. Now, what you can do is first reduce your inflammation. Now, your immune system does two things. It is involved with regulation of inflammation. It helps to create and take and put out fires within the body, but it also is your defense mechanism. So you can reduce the inflammation needs of the body with an anti-inflammatory diet and taking different anti-inflammatories. And then it's really important to make sure you're not in a moldy environment so that your immune system is not really taxed with that anymore. And then start to slowly work on building your immune system response to bring it back into balance. Now, this question is actually a full-day seminar because there's a part of the immune system that we have to balance called the Th1, Th2 part of autoimmunity, where Th1 is more like going in killing viruses and bacteria. Th2 is more like the allergy stuff. So by forming allergies, it's out of balance. Certain things like vitamin D. So number one, drinking the water is great. You want to keep that up. Vitamin D is crucial for this. Omega-3 fatty acids is crucial for this. And then an antioxidant called glutathione tends to get depleted in this scenario. And the unfortunate thing is once you have the mold component, you're more susceptible to other factors. Lyme, Epstein-Barr virus, or mono, glyphosates that are in Roundup that are in food can be harder to eliminate. So there are a few other susceptibilities. The one thing I will say constantly that we want to work on is restoring the bacteria in your digestive system and making sure your ability to digest food does not break down. So we want to see on your lab work your total protein staying in the normal range. When you start to lose the ability to make stomach acid and then break down the foods, that's when we start to see a lot of the problems. You can eventually get to a point of not being as reactive to the mold, but that does take a long, long time and a really concerted effort to bring the immune system back into balance.
Well, if you know you've been exposed and you have some issues and you're not on the full protocol plan yet, would it be okay for them to start taking activated charcoal? I mean, that's one of those binders that it can get in there and it'll bind some of that mold and pull it out of you, right?
Well, it starts from the gut. And so if you're in the moldy environment, or the way to actually start to pull the mold out is to bind it. And so activated charcoal is one, bentonite clay, GI detox, there are different binders, medication-wise, prescription-wise, there's CSM or cholestyramine, but these things will bind to the mycotoxin, the mold, and start to pull it out if you're drinking plain water, which is good, and then you still need to start to rehab the immune system. So in your 50s, if you grew up in it, it's a year for every decade that you've been through that, so... And that's doing it perfectly or well. So just patience and slow and steady and keep working on the stuff you know is healthy for the immune system. But
another thing, the Fabry's, Chris Fabry, who's a very popular national radio host and author and friend, and he and his wife and his family, I think of 9 kids, their whole family was devastated by mold and had to leave a house behind with all of their clothes, with everything, with just a shirt on their backs. They all had to walk away from a mortgage and everything. But one thing his wife, who's become an expert, has said is, she said, for a number of her kids, one of the things that has helped more than anything, they've done all those things that you're talking about, but was deep breathing. Just, she said they just, the cleansingness, the fresh air and deep breathing, the deep, deep breaths in, slow exhale out. She said, I can't believe the detox effect that that has had on some of my kids. And again, if even if you haven't been exposed to mold, I mean, maybe, Doc, we do a whole show on breathing because, you know, I've touched on it before, but I was surprised to hear her say that.
Well, yeah, it's very true. One of the things with mold that you're breathing in, it clogs your filters, and your lungs are a filter. So if think about without food, you can fast for 40 days and then we start to see a decline. Without water, you can go a couple weeks. Without sleep, you can go days. Without sugar, you can only go a couple days or weeks. Without oxygen, 10 minutes. Oxygen is by far the most important thing for our innate function as human beings. And when we have things that block our ability to breathe or get oxygen to our cells, it's very detrimental. And things that, like mold, when you breathe it in, they start to clog up the filter that is our lungs.
Hmm. Interesting. All right, I want to jump on to Mike's question and Dorothy's question. I'm going to kind of mix the or kind of blend them together. Dorothy's is celery juice, drinking celery juice good for you and why? And then Mike says, for a non-vegetarian, is juicing an option? Is there a meat fiber option? What do you say?
Yeah, not a lot of fiber in meat, and so they do have shakes and they do have like fiber supplements and things like that, so you can still, that is an option. Juicing, you do have to be very careful, including celery juice. It's good for the right people because you get the antioxidants, but the sugars are not bound by the fiber. So if you have any type of sugar regulation issues, we don't recommend juicing. And one of the worst things you can do is juice and then cheat. So one of the problems I have is people start juicing because it's good, and they'll juice in the morning and then have sugar cravings mid-afternoon or evening and eat a whole bunch of food. Well, what you're really doing is just speeding up a diabetic scenario. The antioxidants of juicing are great, and you have to get into a fasting state, which, by the way, fasting also can help the mitochondria and the microbiome. So fasting, not long fast, but short fast, can help with that. So there's pros and cons. You have to know your body, and if you have any type of blood sugar regulation issues, you have to make sure that if you're juicing, you're doing it properly. And juicing, you can do a juice fast, but you can't cheat. You just can't. Otherwise, you're making it harder on your system. It can do wonders if you get it right, but it can also be very problematic if you cave.
Interesting. Super show today, this dear listener writes. What do you think about antioxidants like from Ariana berries? I might be saying that wrong. Am I saying? Do you know what they're talking about?
No, I don't. Generally speaking, if you can spell it, that might help.
Try spelling it again. A-R-O-N-I-A. Aronia berries? Maybe...
The choke berries, like that.
Oh, I'm not sure. Maybe text me back, friend, and tell me what you're thinking there.
Berry. Yeah, I've got it.
Good. Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know anything.
Well, she schooled us.
Yes. So
you got to tell us more about
the family.
It. Yeah. All right.
I know the family. So generally speaking, the antioxidants from different fruits are going to be very potent and powerful. Antioxidants in general are good, so I don't know enough about that particular berry, but there's going to be an immune benefit from all antioxidants, so don't know a lot from that particular fruit.
Okay, so I promised that listener about the gut protocol after concussion, and that will be my next question, but this one... again, friend, I'm going to read this, but then I'll qualify it before you answer, Doc. But it says, since there's so many over-the-counter probiotics offered, what is a good form or type to take, or is bigger quantities just better? Super great question.
Yeah.
Just letting you know, we have to be super careful about not giving actual brands. But I mean, as far as like giving you, you should take this brand. But I'm wondering, you referenced a reference where people can find reputable brands of all these different supplements, right?
Yeah, so there is a book that's more for multiple vitamins than probiotics. But I will say this. If you look at a probiotic, it has to be guaranteed viable or live, not at the time of bottling, at the time of shipping, or at the time of expiration. So that's even better. So if it's alive when they shipped it, that's great. If it's alive 3 months later after they shipped it, that's even better. And so look at the bottle carefully, and it'll give you, if it's a reputable company, it'll give you a live strain guarantee, number one. Number two, you're right. What we're finding is the lower doses just don't cut it for a lot of factors. And we also found that if you're not having any prebiotics or food to feed it, that's not going to work either. So a good healthy diet with it helps quite a bit. We also find that for the most part, a variety is better. So there are a few changes like Saccharomyces boulardii and a few other things. We will get specific bacteria and increase those numbers in specific disease cases like colitis and some other things. We know if we can increase certain colonies, it'll decrease certain conditions. But in general, you want a wide spectrum. So there is no one company that gives you every single probiotic. So we probably, of all the things that we do, we use food first for probiotics and then probably about 10 different products from different companies when it comes to the rest. And we're generally okay if people get a good source and we find that it's working well for them. It's kind of weird because it's really all around us. I mean, I started the show off with the Genesis scripture, and like one teaspoon of soil has literally anywhere from 100 million to 100 billion bacteria in it. And so there are some products that are just dirt products. They're clean dirt, if you will. They've been analyzed, but we've actually seen that to be quite productive and helpful too. So.
Yeah, and it's important to pay attention to how you feel. And the thing is, if it's a real probiotic and you have any kind of yeast in your body, which a lot of people do, you will feel crummier before you feel better because you've got that die-off. So how do they tell the difference between healthy die-off that they need to kind of persevere, drink lots of water, maybe back off your dose a little bit and so it's more gentle for you, and or that it's just junk that they're taking? Would they be more likely to just not feel anything if it's just a flatline kind of product?
That's a really good question. So if the product's useless and it's not doing anything, they just won't feel anything. If it is actually killing off or competing with other infections like candida or fungal, you may have a die-off. And so the technical word you could look up, it's called Herxing or Herxmeyer reaction. And so generally it's like having flu-like symptoms without the fever. And so with die-off, it can cause nausea and cause some other problems, but it'll be temporary, and there won't be any temperature issues like infection or anything like that.
Feel better if you can hang in there, right?
Yep.
But you might want to adjust the dose if it's too much.
To slow it down.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You can always slow it down. But generally speaking, it should 2 to 3 weeks. If it's still going on after 3 weeks, then you might be dealing with something else. I will say this too. Generally speaking, you don't get bloating. You can get some the diarrhea and cramping as you kill certain things. They spill their contents, and then that can cause problems. And you know, when we started the show with mitochondria, the way I found this interesting, hopefully you do too, but the way they do testing on mitochondria for mitochondrial diseases is they drop tartaric acid onto the mitochondria, and then they see what fixes it. Well, tartaric acid comes from fungus. So that's the source. So they culture fungus to get the tartaric acid to then damage the mitochondria to then see what we can do with this disease, what can help the mitochondria. So that's always fascinating to me that when we don't have good bacteria and candida and other fungus can grow inside of us, that's naturally damaging the mitochondria. So by getting more bacteria helps support the mitochondria. So you're getting a two-for-one when you're killing off the actual yeast and fungus.
We have to take a break here in a moment, but I listened to a podcast from a microbiome expert, and he did say regardless of what you hear, the best time to take a probiotic is 30 minutes after you eat. He said that's the best time. I don't know if you, is that you feel that too?
Yes, because the probiotic needs a fuel source. They need the prebiotic. Yeah.
Interesting. So as we pause here to go to break, just one last thought, and maybe correct me because you just jump in, Doc, but I'm thinking probably don't want to buy your probiotic at just an over-the-counter. Maybe Google. I don't mean to talk in code. We just have to walk this line very carefully, but maybe what would be a good way to do that? I want to equip them so they know what to do.
It's all about
maybe give me a few brands that you like. Give me a few brands that you like.
Well, actually, if you can, whoever you're, generally speaking, the stores don't carry a lot of good stuff, generally speaking. But there are different companies, whether they be at-home companies or they be meaning like direct sales companies or some of the professional companies like Thorne and Nutridyne and some of the nationally known companies that
Metagenics,
things like that. They tend, the ones that sell or go through medical doctors or clinics tend to have to regulate their products.
Okay.
So it does require a little bit of digging, and it's all about their manufacturer. Find out who their manufacturer is. Many of them use this exact same manufacturer.
Okay. We're going to pause here. When we come back, I promise you, my dear listener friend, Mary Lee wants to know about, is there a gut protocol, health healing program when you've had a concussion? How do we heal our gut after a concussion? And I see a number of other texts. We're going to get to as many as we can with the short time we have left. More with Dr. Troy in a minute. You're listening to an encore presentation of Susie Larson Law. I wish I could walk through when you don't give the answers as I cry out to you. I will trust, I will trust, I will trust in you. Boy, having a great conversation today with Dr. Troy. I'm Susie Larson. This is Susie Larson Live. He joins us every month to answer your health and healing questions. And as usual, didn't even get to touch the pages of questions that I have. So many texts came in, but I made a promise to Mary Lee. She was in an automobile accident, I think a few months ago, got a severe concussion and has since dealt with major gut issues. And she wanted to know, I mean, there are overall, healthy choices one can make for the gut, but is there a specific protocol for healing the gut after a concussion?
So the answer is yes, and it depends on what was damaged with a concussion. So concussion is like a brain bruise, and the brain regulates the gut. And so here's the problem. We have a great research article, and I would even encourage her to look it up. It's a summary of all the traumatic brain injury and then gut. It's a review. It's called a review, and it kind of goes through all of the research that's out there. And I believe it was released in 2018, but they found that the gut microbiome can change within hours of a traumatic injury to the brain.
Wow.
Leaky gut, it can happen within a week of traumatic injury to the brain, concussion. And so what that means is, think of it this way. It's almost like if you have crops growing in the field and all of a sudden a windstorm just comes through there and wipes out all the crops, they're gone in an instant. That's kind of what happens. We have a traumatic brain injury, and the nervous system stops supporting the digestive tract. All the crops kind of die because they basically, there's almost like a shock component to it. And so we don't see a lot of healthy microbiome. So you have to reestablish that. So it's kind of like burnt fields. You've got to cultivate everything again. You've got to replant the crops. So what that means is you got to work on the brain and the gut at the same time. That there is no one protocol. There are people who treat that within functional medicine, and then there's another subset specialty of functional neurology where, in fact, my mentor down in Atlanta runs the Carrick Institute, where they're actually publishing 10 different articles this year on concussion. And so the people who have been trained by the Carrick Institute really have quite a bit of success with concussions. But having said all that, you have to treat it like leaky gut. So there is a protocol for leaky gut where you're taking glutamine and some other binders, as long as the glutamine is okay for the brain, which it can be sometimes and cannot be in other times. Vitamin D helps the brain and the gut in both cases. For my football players with concussions, I have to have them on quite a bit more vitamin D to correct this. The labs will tell you how much because they end up using it up quite a bit. And then the microbiome part of it. And for females, they're funny enough. There's a lot of research that shows how progesterone can improve the overall response. So especially depending on the age and stage of what the hormones were in, if there's anything close to premenopause or around menopause scenario, that actually predisposes you to getting more gut problems because of the lack of neuroprotection from the declining progesterone. It's called atrophic factors, where the hormone is decreasing. So sometimes we actually have to put the women on progesterone while and brain anti-inflammatories, turmeric, to help help the process out. Omega-3 fish oils also helps with that quite a bit. So it can be a process and quite challenging, not one specific protocol, but generally you have to do almost a leaky gut protocol with the microbiome, and then there's going to be nuances to treat within the brain stuff for most people.
Okay. We got about 2.5 minutes left, and this might be too long of a question, but I still felt like we should take it. There's so many friends that we didn't get to. I'm so sorry. Katie says, I always look forward to your visits with Susie, Dr. Troy. I've been struggling with sleep and strange symptoms at night for the last 2 months. I'm a healthy weight, eat well, low carb, anti-inflammatory diet, move my body, take high quality omega-3, magnesium, zinc, probiotics, vitamin D, and eat tons of veggies. Well, right now she's like a poster child. She said, yes. I've never had sleep issues before this, so I'm at a loss for what it could be. I wake up between 1 and 3 a.m. with heart rates in the 150s, severe whole body muscle tremors. My normal resting heart rate is in the 40s at night. Wow. These episodes last night last about 3 hours, and then I'm exhausted the next day. Had a heart monitor for 7 days without major incident. Basic labs normal. Interestingly, I've had severe GERD despite my healthy weight and healthy diet, and it worsens at night. Could this be triggering something, or could there be something else I need to adjust?
Yeah, so she basically mentioned all of the supplements or the vitamins that are involved with insomnia. I think there's the zinc, copper, balance, vitamin A, B1, B3, B6, B12, and magnesium is the only one she didn't mention. But so it sounds like it's not a nutrient problem.
No, she did mention magnesium just quickly, but okay. Keep going. Yep.
So it sounds like something we see when your heart's racing that much. That's a fight-or-flight response in the middle of deep sleep, and there is a condition. I've mentioned it a few times on the radio here called upper airway resistance syndrome. It's where the nickname is thin person sleep apnea, and it's basically missed in most sleep disorders. And all it takes is a tension or spasm in and around the ileocecal valve, bile duct, or the stomach. So the reflux is a sign that might be going on. When that happens, there's a reflexive tensing of the muscles at the base of the skull, and then if they stay tight while in deep sleep, the airway collapses. You don't get enough oxygen to the brain. The brain sends a signal to your adrenal glands to release adrenaline in the middle of deep sleep. So you end up waking up, and it takes hours to get back to sleep because you've got to get rid of this adrenaline. So there's a scenario. So checking your airway. When you open up your mouth, there's the gag reflex and everything is at the back. You should be able to see an open airway. If it's been tight in the back of your neck for a long time, even in our 20s or 30s, we can start to see that uvula kind of hanging down too low. The airway is getting smaller and smaller. That's a sign of weakness because that's just a muscle. And so you can actually re-strengthen that muscle, but identifying that sounds like an upper airway resistance syndrome. Mm-hmm. If she lives in a city with someone who does a seated occiput adjustment, a chiropractor or a DO, that can be part of the process. But fixing the acid reflux scenario, that can be cause or consequence, but that goes hand in hand. And we do see that quite a bit.
And Katie, as we're getting ready to wrap, I'm no doctor, but I play one on radio. When you lie down at night, go to the right of your belly button by a couple inches and massage for 2 minutes. That's the ileocecal valve.
Yes.
Before you go to bed. Right, Doc? Right?
That's
Did
right.
Did I do it right?
Well done.
Thank you very much. All right. I thank you so much for tuning in today, friends. Hope you found some incredible encouragement here today. Dr. Troy, you're a busy man. We appreciate you giving us the time. God bless you, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. God bless.
Thanks for listening to this Susie Larson Live podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support. You can become a supporter today at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the show, you can subscribe to the podcast now at Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link to spread the good news of the gospel and to grow the impact of the show. Thanks for listening to Susie Larson Live.